The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com. Hello, welcome back to the Scouted podcast with me, Joe Donoghue. I hope you all had a lovely and relaxing Christmas with friends and family. This time of year can only mean one thing, of course, and that's that the January transfer window is rapidly approaching, a time when the fruits of labour from scouts, analysts, data scientists and the like come to the fore. It's my pleasure then to welcome an expert in the data field, somebody who's worked at the very top of the game when it comes to the data points behind what happens on and off the pitch. Dominic Jordan is currently Chief Data Officer with 12 Football, which I'm sure we'll hear more about very shortly, was also recently the Director of Data at Manchester United. Dominic, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here. How are things going?
Things are going very well. Thank you very much. I had a great Christmas and have very much enjoyed the football over this period, indeed.
Yes, of course, it is. It's a real festival of football, isn't it, around this time of year? Well, I just want to start chronologically and give people sort of a background on who you are and, you know, your experience and where your expertise, you know, comes from. Where did it sort of all begin for you in a professional sense?
Yeah, so I first worked with data at a company called ITIS. Like, seriously worked with data. That was a startup company based in Manchester, specializing in traffic information. So we traced vehicles from GPS and put them onto maps, and then figured out where traffic congestion was occurring. It was a really fun company to work for, a startup. And when I worked there, that was bought by an American company based in Seattle. And so I was kind of thrust into this world of very high level data science in the place that's probably got the highest concentration of data scientists in the world, on the west coast of the US. So Seattle, home to Amazon, home to Microsoft, home to Expedia, home to Starbucks, and so on. And so I was suddenly working with these incredible data scientists, lots of whom worked in startups, some of whom worked in big companies. And that was a real education for me in terms of like how data science could work in a business. So that was kind of the first time I ever sort of considered myself to be a data scientist. And that was a really fun company to work for, but very challenging given that it was kind of 8 hours time difference from my home. So I looked for eventually started looking for a different company to work for, and one that was based closer to home. And I ended up at an online fashion company called M Brown. It's one of the oldest, I think the oldest mail order company in the world, certainly in the UK, one of the original companies that delivered their products by mail back in the 1800s. So it was a very maybe it was in the 1900s. I forgot my history of M Brown now. So apologies to my M Brown colleagues, but it was a long time ago. They were one of the first companies to use the mail to actually deliver products, and that was a great company to work for as well. And I learned loads about working in bigger companies through working there. And I worked in more kind of standard data science fields, you know, trying to solve pricing, trying to figure out advertising and all of those things. And then after a couple of years there, I had a call from a recruiter saying, you know, I know, get a few calls from recruiters, and I'd said to them, look, I'm not really interested in another job. I'm working here. I'm going to work here for another couple of years. I'm not interested. I've still got lots to do here, unless it's some incredible job. And this guy said, well, you know, would you be interested in going to work for Manchester United? And I was like, actually, I probably would. So that's how that came about. It was kind of out of the blue, and I wasn't really looking for it. But what United were looking for at the time was somebody who had the experience of setting up and running modern data science teams, because that hadn't really happened at the club before. So that's how I kind of ended up. My journey ended, you know, went through startups, West Coast America, online fashion, and how I ended up in football.
I was going to say, it sounds a very roundabout way, and obviously picking up lots and lots of experience en route, but it's not the conventional way that, you know, many people, I mean, I know there are data analysts and people who work in data who listen to this podcast. It's kind of not the conventional route into working for a, you know, a big club or any club in particular. What were your initial impressions, you know, coming from the non-football world into a pretty prominent position at a global club?
So I didn't ask too many questions going in, because I kind of knew that what I would discover was more likely to put me off joining than make me want to go ahead. But when I joined, I was surprised, I suppose, at how traditional, you know, the club was in terms of its processes, and there weren't very many joined up processes that allowed data to influence the decision making. So a lot of stuff was done organically, and I'm talking about, and I can talk generally about football. You know, how do you find a coach? Well, it's a list of people that the director of football knows, right? Or that clubs that have beaten the team recently, you know, or you know, some random way of kind of getting a short list, versus a what I would be more used to in business, which would be a structured thinking about the process more generally, and then coming to bring the experts together with the data to make a good decision. So I was really surprised at how few processes there were in place which data could influence. And that was kind of like year one, actually was helping to set up those processes to allow data to influence the decision making.
What would you say? I mean, you were there for around 2 years, correct?
Two and a half years, yeah.
Two and a half years, yes. You know, what would you say that in that time you were able to achieve with Man United?
Well, so I was brought in to set up the data science team and to build something that was very modern. And when I left, we 100% had achieved that in terms of the infrastructure. You know, the club was had a very well established modern data infrastructure that allowed decision making to be made quickly and to react to new kind of situations. For example, a new coach coming in and wanting things done differently, or a new director of football coming in. So we were very ready and agile, in a position to be agile for those kind of things. Which is really critical, as I discovered in football. Some clubs can be quite unstable, and it was very difficult to kind of definitively say this is how things are going to be done in 2 years' time or in 1 year's time, right? And in data science, of course, you have to do a lot of preparatory work. You have to build infrastructure, you have to build processes, you have to build visualizations, you have to build metrics, and all of those things take time and effort to put into place. And if the person that you are kind of delivering that information to, the expert who eventually has to make the decision, if they are not going to be there in a year's time, well, you know, you might be facing down the barrel of a completely different way of doing things. So it's really, really important to have a very solid data infrastructure and systems that are agile enough to allow you to kind of react to that kind of situation. So that was thing one. The second thing was, over the course of my time there, we were able to establish better processes, which allowed data to influence the decision making. And so you can imagine what those were like, right? So there were, you know, processes for recruitment, player recruitment, processes for finances, processes for to help sports science, right? To influence the pre-game analysis, right? Process to influence post-game analysis. So all of the things that you would think about in a football club where data might influence it, we had data to influence that, and we had processes, and we had means with which to influence it. So that was either reporting or people, in position to do those things. So I think that in terms of the kind of the brief, I pretty much nailed it, right? We built a modern data science infrastructure. In terms of the influence that data had, it's very, very difficult to definitively say how much influence data had, because a lot of it is counterfactual. So the things which, you know, the only one thing can happen, you're going to either buy player A or player B. And so a lot of the kind of influence was, don't buy this player, or don't spend that much money on this player for these reasons. And so there's things that didn't happen, right? As opposed to like a lot of like the narrative you kind of want the narrative to be, oh, we discovered this player through data who went on to become, you know, the next whoever, right? But that's obviously very hard if everybody has access to effectively the same data, and you're operating at the very long tail of football, which Manchester United are, then saying, well, I discovered this player who's going to be the next Messi, it's almost impossible. And in fact, you know, that whole idea that somehow that's going to happen if you set up a data science team, you're fooling yourself, right? The greatest influence you can have in data science is by helping to create processes and systems that work for the long-term health of the club, and which influence those decision-making points over a long time, and specifically stop clubs making big mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to say, well, there was this or this that happened, and I can't say those things because I'm not allowed to say those things. But like the point is that we had a huge influence.
Yeah, very nice. I mean, you're talking there about how the narrative or the preferred narrative would be, you know, we helped to identify the X player and that player went on to become, you know, I mean, it's a hyperbolic example, but yes, the next Messi, Haaland or whoever.
Yeah.
You know, what do you make of the clubs that, you know, I think sometimes we like to put clubs like maybe Brighton or Brentford on a pedestal and say, yeah, look at what they do with recruitment. Obviously, they're you know, relying on data for part of that process. What do you make of clubs that do seem to consistently get those big decisions right? And it appears as though the mistakes, as you're talking about, the ones that are avoided, they do seem to continually avoid making mistakes. You know, what, from a data point of view, from somebody within that world, you know, how does that translate to it being perceived, or the processes being perceived as positive or functioning well?
Yeah, so that's a really good point, because it's very clear that those two clubs in particular are using data very well, right? And they're using data well because they have, probably because of the background of the owners. So both of those clubs have ownership groups that have backgrounds in gambling. And gambling, if you are a professional gambler or you provide information to professional gambling groups, you are not going to survive in business unless you have a clear competitive advantage, right? So that, so I'd say one point is that their data science is focused is focused on long-term outcomes, right, as opposed to short-term solutions. And what that fits with is, so it's like a casino. A casino doesn't really care whether somebody comes in and wins £10,000 because they know on average they're going to win, you know, £5 from every person who comes in the door, right? So the short-term fluctuation is less important than the long-term processes. And the other thing that's true about those two clubs is that they have this very stable ownership group that has had ownership groups that have had a vision for the clubs over a long period of time and being consistent about what good looks like, whether they're in the, you know, Championship, League One, or the Premier League, right? And in fact, if you think about, if you look at all the clubs that are kind of, you know, considered to be good with data, they all have the same stable ownership, right? And that comes back to my first point, which is like in business, you wouldn't expect to be successful as if you, let's say you're running a restaurant, right? You wouldn't expect to be successful if one week you were a French restaurant, a high-end French restaurant, and the next week you just simply decided that you were going to be a counter-service Italian restaurant, right? Because all of the equipment, all of the staff, all of the customer base, everything that you had established as being, you know, important for the business, then is focused somewhere else. So obviously you're going to lose money. You're going to lose time as you change all of those processes. And it's really no different in football. Football kind of likes to think of itself as being different. But actually, the thing that is really important is saying, well, we have a long-term vision and we are going to somehow overcome those short-term fluctuations to make decisions that are focused on that North Star. And that those are the clubs that are like, hey, data managed to influence the decision-making. Well, it's no real surprise because, you know, because they know what they're looking for, they know what good looks like, and they're able to bring data into their decision making processes in a controlled and trusted way, right? Otherwise, what you're getting is like, I've got a new manager. The new manager says, well, I need this player to be successful, and the director of football is like, well, okay, that's what he's telling me. And I have no way to evaluate whether or not that is what he's telling me is good or not, right? The scouts are saying this player's good. Another scout saying the player's bad. Well, how does the director of football decide between those? You know, they have so much pressure on them. That decision-making process has so much pressure on it, and there are so few times when you make recruitment decisions that, you know, unless you have this North Star and this long-term vision, you are going to flip-flop around. And you are going to say, well, I'm going to hire a coach to be successful now, or I'm going to buy this player who I think is going to make it successful now, instead of trusting your long-term vision. And I think that is the main difference. And that's really kind of what I was most surprised about, because you just don't have businesses which survive in the outside world if they do that. But clubs survive because they have an insulating factor, which is that people still go and watch them whether they're good or not, right? They still have that fan base, do you know what I mean? So they're insulated from some of the bad decisions that are made.
Yeah, it feels like sometimes they're companies which are quite inelastic, in the sense that, you know, they're still viewed as a community good, and as a result the mistakes, particularly for, you know, bigger clubs, can be absorbed to an extent, of course. I just want to touch on go into what your role with 12 Football is currently as chief data officer. And, you know, for anybody who isn't familiar with 12 Football, You know, it's an organization which was co-founded by David Sumter, who many people will be aware is the author of Soccermatics. And, you know, is working with artificial intelligence in football, as well as, you know, some leading data experts as well as yourself there, Dominic. What is your role as chief data officer with 12, and what's a general overview of the company?
Yeah, so I joined 12. I'm going to answer those in the kind of the opposite order, if that's all right. I joined 12 because really they are the one of the most innovative analytics companies in football, probably the most innovative in terms of like the overall history of football analytics. A lot of the original ideas in football analytics were created or codified by David in the early days. He has run a very successful course that allows people, the Soccermatics Pro course now, that allows analysts to get into football. And you kind of touched on like my path into football. I wouldn't recommend my way of doing it, but you know, many, many people have followed that Soccermatics Pro course and have gone on to become analysts or work in football. So he kind of, you know, was one of the original you know, people working with football data, and he's gone on to educate loads of people, and we have this pipeline now of talent that's coming in through the Soccermatics Pro course. So not just people but also ideas. So he's very connected to academia. And what that means is that it's got this tremendous, you know, a factory of people and ideas that are solving problems that football clubs have, and other people that work with football, so broadcasts, for example, but primarily football clubs, to actually deliver solutions to problems that clubs have. And my job is to. Is to take those ideas and to turn them into products which actually help clubs make better decisions over time. And one of the things that we're trying to do is to bring analytics to a wider audience in terms of clubs. You know, it's like at United, I had effectively a team of 13 people at the most number of people. Some of whom worked in the club and some of whom were outsourced engineering. That kind of level of, you know, that kind of size of department is not currently available to most clubs. That kind of size of department is small compared to American sports. And there's lots to learn from American sports about how to use analytics to influence decision-making over the long term. But within, you know, a lot of clubs throughout Europe and throughout the world, they would never be able to afford that level of department, that size of department. So what 12 has done is to build systems that take the best data science, but to combine it with the kind of most modern technology to deliver analytics in a voice that speaks to people who aren't necessarily educated in the technical details of data. So instead of saying, you know, this player's XG over the previous season was whatever, you know, that doesn't mean much to a lot of coaches, right? Even though XG is fairly well used and is one of the more kind of widely understood metrics, there are still lots of coaches who want to be you want to have that information delivered in a way that is more familiar to them. So to take that information and to translate it into a natural language and say this player had a lot of good shots on goal, high quality, high volume shots on goal over the previous season, they say the same thing. They're just talking a language which is more accessible. And I think that that's a really valuable product set for a lot of clubs. So instead of delivering data and, you know, and pie charts and pizza charts and line graphs. What you're delivering is information which help people to make better decisions in language that they can understand. And I think that has the power to bring data to lots of clubs that never were able to use it before.
Do you think that football maybe inherently has sort of a vernacular problem with you know, how it translates ideas? You know, you might be, what you're talking about there is sort of the relationship between how coaches receive information or people who maybe aren't as data savvy and how, you know, data scientists are trying to disseminate that information. You know, do you feel as though there can sometimes be an impasse that can, you know, somebody like yourselves at 12 can help broach?
Well, I think that's true, and that's true of lots of businesses, right? You know, when I worked in fashion, there was, you know, I wanted to create metrics that were specific to fashion, right? When I worked in traffic, I wanted to create metrics that were specific to traffic, and we had to speak. You always have to translate those into the language of the expert who's making the decision, right? That's what a lot of data science, good data science that's human in the loop, has to do, right? It has to take a decision that has to be made, bring the right data in, explain it, visualize it in a way that the person who's making the decision can understand, and then you make better decisions. What I think football does have is less of a vernacular problem, but more of a diversity problem, right?
Okay.
So this is true in football generally. I worked there for two and a half. I worked at United for 2.5 years, and I don't think I met one other person who'd worked in a business other than football, right? Maybe at the C level, but within football, everybody had come from another club. Mm-hmm. Right? When I interviewed for my team, so when I joined, there was nobody. When I interviewed for a team, I had 500 applications, I think, for four roles, right? The standard was the standard in terms of like overall data science skill was very poor. Lots of people like kind of knew about football analytics, but they didn't know how to write code in a reusable fashion. They didn't know how to build processes that were robust, right? And so there was like so all those people had come into football through being football people rather than being good at their jobs in a way that was translatable to football. So what United did was quite unusual. To hire somebody like me to come in and say, well, establish this team, was really, really unusual and was quite a bold step. And different from what other clubs, but it was the right decision, because you look at I still meet with people from other clubs, and there's like one data scientist in for the whole of a Premier League club. Well, you know, the scale of the problems that you're trying to deal with, the scale of the engineering, the scale of the decision making that you're trying to influence is so huge. That is not possible. It's not possible to in any business with one day scientists, right? So like the naivety about what modern data science looks like I was quite shocked by. I probably shouldn't have been, but I was. And the other thing I'd say is that out of those 500 applications, I have four in total that were from female applicants. And, you know, my observation in general, I went to the big conferences the football analytics conferences, and it's almost all men, right? And you know, that takes a while to change. It's almost all white men. That takes a while to change, but there's no pathway into football because, like I say, everybody who was hired was like, oh, I knew this guy at this other club, so I'm just, you know, he was pretty good, so I'm just going to hire him. You know, it's, and I think that is a huge problem because, you know, like, you know, coming in as an outsider and like saying, like talking to football people was sometimes tough and it required a lot of work, but, you know, they just weren't used to dealing with anybody other than other football people, you know?
Yeah, no, I can echo that. You know, from a journalistic standpoint, it's sometimes you're in press rooms and I feel as though you're kind of you're talking to yourself, but in a different form. And yeah, I do echo that. Just going back onto your point about the female applicants, you know, who are some of the female, I don't know, you could talk about role models who you think are doing really, really great work in the football sphere, despite, you know, that backdrop of it being predominantly a male-dominated field?
Well, it's difficult to, like saying who's doing great work within the club is rather difficult to say because, you know, clubs typically don't want to give away all of their secrets. There are a couple of clubs that have been fairly forward-thinking, I think, in terms of, you know, recognizing that external influence and a different way of thinking is important. So I'd highlight Arsenal as being one of them. You know, Sarah Rudd was the one, again, like David Sumter, was one of the original thinkers within the football space. And, you know, she often like talks at conferences about her experiences working in football. She still works in football now. But Arsenal have been pretty forward thinking. I have observed Ajax as being another one. You know, they have a fairly strong, history of employing women in the football club, in data science within the football club. And more recently, Manchester City also have. They don't talk a lot about how they work, but again, you know, have got a good, strong track record of finding the best people to work in the club. You know, no matter what their kind of, you know, whether their quote unquote face fits, right? And you know, and I think that's a cultural thing, because if I turned up and said, you know, I want to hire this particular applicant, and the club had turned around and said to me, well, you know, we don't want to have, you know, it's not appropriate for a woman to be working in on the men's side, right? That would have been a huge problem for me, and that wasn't the case. I didn't actually end up hiring any of the four women that applied, but that wasn't because of the club. It was, and I would have been extremely, extremely unhappy if that had happened. My sense is that other clubs aren't there yet, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just going back to your role with 12. You know, you have some ideas on sort of methodology and good and responsible data use. Would you be able to tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that, and what you think sort of quote unquote good data is?
Yeah, so I've talked a little bit about this on in other environments, but what was one of the really interesting problems that we started with was, which are the good data providers and which are the, I don't want to say bad because they're all have good aspects of them, but which are the best? How do you, what process would we put in place to determine what are the best data providers? And it was a really interesting process because, you know, the data providers for event data, for example, or for tracking data, typically only work within the sports field or typically only work within football. And therefore, you know, unlike in other businesses that I worked in, you had an opportunity to work with providers who were were not just good now, but likely to get better in the future. And we were able to have a direct influence on those data providers, right? So what I mean is, there's a kind of roundabout way of saying, when we sat down and we reviewed not only the quality of the information that the data providers were providing, but also their willingness to get better over time, because that was different from other businesses that I'd worked in. And so one aspect of good that I was really interested in was which companies are are thinking about football and collection of data in a way that is going to be useful for building models versus useful for them selling information to clubs. And so when we did the review of event data providers, you know, the company that I settled on was Impact, and that was it's a German company that is less well known in the UK than some of the other more established providers, but the quality of their information was very good, and in addition, they were much more open to getting better through a collaborative process than just being, you know, just providing information and saying it's kind of the same for everybody. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's really an underrated aspect of thinking about data quality in this space, because this is going to be true. You know, the data providers are always going to have like quite a small addressable market, right? And the ones that that are in it for just to be a company versus to make football better, you know, I think that's a way of differentiating between data providers. So, you know, that was one aspect of what good data looked like. And the other aspect, I think, which isn't really addressed by the data providers, but is where I think 12 and other, there are other great analytics companies out there, right, have a real opportunity or a responsibility, which is to, you know, to kind of understand that the space, the football space, is fairly immature in terms of its use of data. And there is a lot of data that is created that is actually misleading in terms of the conclusions that you can draw from it, that you should be drawing from it. But those data providers like are just kind of blanket. Yeah, here are 400 metrics, right? You go figure out which ones are important. Well, if they can't understand the metrics and they couldn't have one data scientist working on it, you know, the chances of them being able to unpick what is important and what is, you know, not important or genuinely misleading, I just think that companies should take more responsibility for what they are producing, right? Because it's not just about making money. As we point out, one of the reasons I love working in football is that you are helping clubs get better, and therefore making those communities that those clubs belong to give them a better experience, a better overall experience, right? And that can be success, that can be style of play, that can be avoiding relegation, right? Because there's lots of ways in which you can make people happy. It could be winning a derby, it can be winning a cup, right? But, you know, if what you're saying was, well, here's some information, you go and figure it out, that's causing as many problems as it's solving, right? And one of the reasons why I like 12 is because they are trying to solve clubs' problems using data, not cause clubs' problems with their data. And I'm not saying those other companies are trying to cause clubs' problems, but the truth of the matter is that, you know, event data is very complex to interpret. Tracking data is of a, you know, exponential size larger and very difficult to implement and interpret. Soon we're already getting body pose estimation data. We might get audio data. We might get all kinds of other data sources coming in. Nobody knows what the data landscape is going to look like in 5 years' time. But that proliferation of data is going to cause as many problems as it solves, right? So if you have clubs that are already thinking we're having our lunch eaten by clubs that are using data well, right? Giving them more data is not going to help solve their problems. Giving them solutions that they can trust is. And that's what I mean by responsibility, you know, briefly.
No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's very corporate speak, but you know, actually presenting clubs with actionable insights, shall we say, that they can, you know, they can interpret well, obviously makes a lot of sense. I just wanted to go back to, you said something about body player estimation data and audio data and how that could potentially be used. I have absolutely no idea what either of those things are. What, could you just give us a brief explanation of what that is and how it could possibly be used in football?
Yeah, so body pose estimation is, so it's more like the modern version of the Football Manager where you can see the players. If you play Football Manager, as I used to do back in the day, it was top-down blobs moving around the pitch, the ball, the referee, you know, and that was the way that football was presented. And essentially tracking data broadly, currently, that's what it looks like. So it's the location of each player on the pitch, and not even every player, actually, in a lot of cases. From broadcast tracking, if they take the tracking information from broadcast, it's only where the camera is pointing, right? So you have companies that are trying to fill in the gaps, but essentially what you get is, you know, the position of each player on the pitch. But you don't get which way they're facing, right, necessarily. Yes. You don't get which way they're looking, right? You don't get any information about whether they are on or off balance. And so body pose estimation is the next level of that, which says, well, we will effectively model each limb of the player. And so what you can see, for example, is whether a player is, which direction the player is facing, which direction they're looking, right? Or whether they're scanning. So there's been some work on scanning, quite a lot of work on scanning and its importance to players being, having certain abilities. And so that kind of information could come in the future. And so what you're getting is not just the position of the player on the pitch, but also, you know, 100 other pieces of information about which, you know, things that you might work on, right? Audio, I mentioned audio because somebody once presented a research from us about how players communicate with each other on the pitch, right? There's not been a huge amount of research about this as far as I'm aware, but you could imagine, you know, interpreting a player's language, right? Or how they communicate, whether they are, whether they're showing indications of fatigue, right? Whether they're showing indications of irritation or other things. You could imagine building models based off of that. Now, that's much, much more data, right, for people to use, a whole bunch more problems that could be solved, and therefore determining which ones are the most important ones to help make a club better, whatever better means for a club, right? It's absolutely no good going to most clubs and giving them more data. That's my broad point, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the future lies in giving clubs solutions that they can trust.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Makes sense. Again, the idea of, you know, going to a club which maybe doesn't have the infrastructure to receive the data on a huge scale. And as you were saying, you know, a club, for example, which has one data scientist, as you say, giving them too many problems rather than solutions. Staying with 12, obviously artificial intelligence is a big part. It's kind of very in vogue at the moment. You know, what is 12's role with AI? You know, does this come back to the whole responsible use concept and basically streamlining how clubs receive this information?
So 12's specific current focus with AI is using LLMs, so large language models like ChatGPT, to interpret information that is useful to clubs. So the example that I gave previously was, you can ask, a more general example would be, we have a product that allows a user to ask for the strengths and weaknesses of a player, right? So you can choose any player from virtually any professional league in the world, and and the information will come back in natural language. So that's a kind of modern implementation of AI to translate data which is in tables or visuals into language that can be interpreted by anybody, from the chairman of the board down to a scout. Say down, that sounds wrong, right? But like from all different ways of thinking about data, and even fans, right? So even a person in the stands can interact with this information, and they don't have to have that technical background in data. So that's my point about 12, is that whatever the next thing coming out from research is, that pipeline of kind of building useful products from it and delivering it to clubs, that's always going to be there. So whatever, you know, the future holds for AI, currently, you know, the LLMs are very in vogue, but in 2 to 3 years time, there may be some other great implementation of AI that allows clubs to make better and better decisions more and more quickly. And a company like 12 will be able to do that as well. So that's where we are at the moment, like where we are in the future. Well, future's hard to predict, right?
We'll have to wait and see. Yes, famously hard to predict. Dominic, thank you very much for joining us on the Scouted podcast today. Is there anything that you'd also like to add, you know, perhaps that we haven't covered with 12, or anything that you really want to stress to our listeners?
You know, I think that the it's really been lovely to actually see how data has become more common in broadcast in particular, right? And that's that's hugely beneficial to helping clubs make better decisions, because you have like Monday Night Football on Sky in the UK that actually, you know, has pretty detailed analysis and uses data in a way that is very, very insightful. And there are some really great people working in the data community in general. What I would stress is something I said at the beginning, right? Like, there are no magic bullets through data to fixing a club's problems, right? And what it comes down to is allowing the people who have to make the decisions, giving them the best chance of making the best decisions over the long term. And if you put that in place over time, you will become any club can turn into Brighton or Brentford. It's true.
Well, if that's not a message to end on, then I don't know what is, particularly on this podcast, where we do sing the praises of those two clubs on a regular basis. Dominic, thank you very much for your excellent insights there. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening. Many of the industry folk will have gleaned something from that. We'll be back next month with another podcast, another excellent guest from within the world of football. But for the time being, have a happy new year and bye for now. The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up-and-coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com.